final points about planting. Your final grade points. Well, I noticed yesterday we talked about the whole issue of soaking in water. And I noticed an interesting tshuva from Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner is a posek, you know, is a Talmud of the Chazon Ish, was very mekurif to the Chazon Ish. There's much fascinating lumbus that you can find in his tshuvas in the spirit of the Chazon Ish. So he has a number of tshuvas throughout his printed tshuvas where he has Ha'aris and the Ramah, Machal Shabbos and the like. So he discusses this whole issue that we spent some time on yesterday, the issue of soaking in water. And the question of what exactly is the status of that type of Zoreya, why the Rambam calls soaking seeds in water Zoreya and not lush, like the Gemara says. What exactly are the consequences of that? And we mentioned that there are basically two different approaches. That either it's because it's considered to be Zoreya because of what sprouts inside. And as we discussed, that was a major source for the whole discussion of hydroponics, the modern day practice of cultivating growth within water as opposed to soil, which we mentioned is a major Shemitah issue. So either that's what the Rambam's getting at, or the Rambam's saying in Chiddush that anything that is a preparatory act for a malacha is considered to be a malacha as well. And therefore, that's what's going on here, that by soaking this seed in water, it's going to take, you know, it's going to have a better process in terms of being planted, and therefore it's an active zarei. That was the understanding of the Rabbaz. The Rabbaz, by the way, in his tshuva, he says that if you were doing this so that you can grind it up better, you're doing the exact same thing, you're doing it so you can grind it up better, that would be an act of tochen. So the same act could either be Zoreya or Tochein, depending on what secondary process comes next. What are you doing this to prepare for? So that was the understanding of the Rabbaz. Rav Vosner happens to have a couple of comments in his Shuvas where he says he thinks it's very surprising, it's a very Mechudish idea, which he thinks is not supported by other sources. He mentions even the Yerushalmi, which we've mentioned a couple of times, where the Yerushalmi has a very broad scope of everything that's included in Zoreya. And it says, Kol Mashul and Mahavchil is that pre, anything that upkeeps the pre or allows it to have continued growth, even when it's about chasing away negative forces, like that Yerushalmi that we mentioned a few times, says even that is not saying as much as this. That's saying, at least when we're talking about the planted seed itself and protecting the planted seed, but the idea that something that comes before the seed is planted, just because it's a step you might take in preparation, thinks is a very big chiddush which he's not comfortable with. But in any event, we mentioned that within that idea, so if we have two basic approaches as to why it's significant, either because it causes something to sprout, or it is a preparatory act, so then that could be a possible relevance to the question of Artzit She'eino Noko. I discussed that yesterday, that if you have a pot that doesn't have holes in it, so this pot has no clear or actual connection to the ground, to the karka. So it was a machlokas achronin, whether or not it's considered to be an active zriya planting inside that pot. So we mentioned that some, such as the Chai Adam and a few others, Tarach HaShulcha and Shvisa Sashabis, a number of poskim thought that this water Rambam is a good proof for pots. Because if you can be considered in violation of Zoreya by putting something in water, so then why should it be any less Zoreya if you put it in a pot, which is also not connected to the ground? Neither of them is karka. So that was the way the Nishmas Adam and others brought a proof from here that it's an actual act of Zoreya to plant within a pot without holes. And that's a shame enough. And what did we mention yesterday, why that might not be a slam dunk proof? Because it depends what the Rambam's getting at. If the Rambam's trying to say, this shows you that sprouting within water is also Zoreya, then fine, it's a good proof. But if we say it's about preparing for something else, then it's not relevant. That's not what's going on when you plant in a Utzit She'eino Noko. So Rav Vosner has another reason for that one. He says, even if you take the first approach, even if you believe the Rambam calls it Zoreya when you soak the seed, because you're causing it to sprout, thinks that's not a good source to say that an atzitz she'eino nokud is called zareh. Because maybe once we're planting in water, so all water is equal. Once we're planting in karka, there's a difference between karka that's connected to the world, we call it karka olam, which is an expression the Gemara uses in a different context, but karka olam is the karka of earth, as opposed to detached karka. You hear this word that maybe karka has to be actual endless karka, so to speak, while water might be water in the pot, water in your hydroponic pool is the same as water anywhere else. So I thought that was a fascinating distinction. Anyone have any comments on what that distinction might be getting at?
Or I can say the Avinezer brings something similar. If you plant in Hatsi Shinanaku, but in some future time, seeing the roots will outgrow the pot so that it just paved over the edge. Mm-hmm. And it's exposed to the Avir Karka, he says. So then he says you have Zareya and then you have Avir Karka, and therefore the combination of the both will create the mystical race.
But it's essentially, it's a fascinating idea. And it's a sense, it's a little bit like the Rashash, right? Because what you're saying is, okay, you did something now, and ultimately it led to it being rooted in the karka. What's the difference between that and the Rashash? That in the normal Rashash case, we at least started with what's recognized as an active Zriya. Here, we need a little bit of a Chiddush to call the water an active Zriya. And to say that the eventual karka connection now traces back to this water is a little bit more of a jump.
It's not even so clear that he thinks it happens initially. You might think it only happens once you have that second component of karka ola.
And you're saying this is the Adonizer himself, who's normally in the chesed of men.
Yeah.
Right? So it should normally happen initially, and here he's going to say it only happens when it becomes a connected to the ground, which makes sense, because that the initial putting it in the water is not an active zri, according to either possibility. And according to the way the Magen Avraham understands the Rambam, it's not, and the way we normally define zri, it's not. So it makes sense. Any other thoughts about what that chiluk might mean? That why in the ground, if we're going to say ground, it's got to be actual ground. If we're going to say water, it could be chayev d'oraisa of water also. I'm not sure exactly what the svara is, unless he wants to say that the whole gather of karka is that the karka essentially has to be endless. You know, that the karka that's connected to the actual ground is a permanent source of growth, while a karka that's separated from the ground, somehow that's fundamentally different from the karka. Well, once we're dealing with water, we already have kind of a parallel track, which doesn't necessarily follow the same rules. I don't know if there's enough basis to say such a distinction. That's a fascinating point that's worth thinking about. Do you have any further thoughts about that? I'm happy to come back to
it. Maybe he feels that it's like scientifically that maybe because you need endless earth to have a certain amount of nutrients. In a small pot, you wouldn't necessarily have the reaction you get with water. Maybe he just thinks it's a simple reaction with water. It doesn't matter how much. Maybe on a scientific level, it feels are different.
Could be.
If you have like a garden on your roof, that there's a machlokas whether you know the roof was considered to be an actual part of God, because it does sound, it's not limitless. But at the same time, they still have the ability somehow to still expand, which is why you wouldn't be able to do that. And you know, it's really limited in how much soil it has.
Could be. Or it could also be, as others have noted, it's just a derech issue that maybe once we see there's two types of planting kederach, you can plant in water or you can plant in soil. But soil, those only kederach when it's actually in the soil that's connected to the earth. While water is kederach in either way. It's a valid path as well. It's also interesting, so we mentioned two points yesterday which Rav Osner thinks don't work together. They're independently true, but they don't work together. One is that we said that this is step one in the discussion of hydroponics. This modern process of cultivating growth within water. We mentioned a few minutes ago its relevance to shviyas. That's a major issue. What exactly is the status of such planting? So clearly this Rambam is a major part of that puzzle. That's fact A. Fact B, we mentioned also that even according to the Rashash or anyone else, that you're only chayiv once there's actually a hashrasha in the ground, so then, okay, so when it comes to this model, it's parallel, you're only chayav once it sprouts. We talked about yesterday about interfering before it sprouts. And we mentioned that that works very well according to the Rashash, but even according to the Minchas Chinuch, if there's a chayav right away, that's probably only true by normal zriya in the ground, where it's dominant to the zriya in the Mishkan. But zriya in water, something like that, which is not the exact model of the Mishkan, it's only going to be chayav once it actually happens. So even the Minchas Chinuch, who would say you can't interrupt in the middle of planted seeds, once it's in, you can't come take it out later, he would agree that seeds and water you can take out before they sprout, and you'll save it from a chiyuv. Right? That sound familiar? We mentioned that yesterday. So Rav Avner suggests, or understands, he more than suggests, that these two points don't go together. That when we talk about hydroponics in the modern context, so now they do it in a very fancy way with all kinds of added nutrients, and it's not stone water. It's starting as water, but it's water that's greatly enhanced to essentially take the place of carbon. So therefore, the water that's used in contemporary hydroponics is equivalent to carbon. That you don't need the Rambam's Chiddush to call modern hydroponics water carbon, essentially. So while, yes, the Rambam's clearly relevant to the whole discussion, but hydroponics would be karka even without this. So therefore, if you believe you're chayiv right away from putting seeds in the soil, so too, you're planting with hydroponics, as soon as you put the seeds in the hydroponic water, you're going to be chayiv as well, despite the approach that many took, that there'd be a difference between something that matches the Mishkan and something doesn't. Here, the hydroponics of contemporary usage differs significantly from the water that the Rambam's talking about, which is plain water. Does that make sense? Does that follow? Yes, sir.
So if you have like a bucket of that water, it would be like the same case as Atsuchin and Akuver?
A bucket of hydroponic water?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly if there's other things that are involved in terms of cult. I don't know if you can just transfer it to a bucket, and if it's just about this enhanced, or there's also something else about the cultivation that's even more than the nutrients in the water. But presumably, if you have it like that, then it would be an atzitz in an alcove that's connected to the soil, right? Or even more than that, you would need the atzitz. I mean, you can use the atzitz for practical, right? You can use the atzitz for practical purposes because you can't have the water in nothing. But essentially, he's saying it's like karka. The status of the karka itself for all of these purposes.
Wouldn't according to him then you need like some type of karka olam type of aspect?
So
switching the model.
Right, so then the question again becomes maybe this is constantly replenished because it's replenished through active effort, so it's not the same as it's more comparable to the pot that you have in your house. Unless we say it's a derech issue, that this is the derech of planting in hydroponics. And hydroponics is now equivalent to karka, so maybe you wouldn't need an ethical source. Maybe that's also called comparable to the karka element. Maybe the issue isn't endless, maybe it's just derech. It's basically different ways of looking at what the karka element
is. It seems like the chiluk hinges initially on being able to separate totally karka and mayim.
Right. So can we assume, because if we assume there's no permanent source of hydroponic water, obviously you could plant something in the ocean, but in terms of it being in this category of hydroponic water, presumably we don't have something that matches karka if we're talking from the endless factors. Maybe that's a riot, really. The derech issue is more the relevant issue. Avram?
So we're looking at it as karka in the sense that it gets nutrients, mm-hmm. but we also say it's karka like for Israel purposes, for nutrients and ice.
That's for the big modern discussion. It's a very hot topic because of the Shvius ramifications. The Trumas and Maisis ramifications are there as well. This is a huge sugya, but that's important, but workable. The Shvius ramifications are the biggest ramifications, halacha l'maisa, outside of Shabbos, because it's up or down. Are you going to do this during the Shemitah year or not? Is this a way to have produce during the Shemitah year? It's a major ongoing machlokas.
Is it a bunch of different, there's like a lot of different issues involving mm-hmm. Shemitah? And Shabbos, you're saying?
Well, they could be the same. They could be over this whole question of what is the status of hydroponics and what exactly can you derive from this Rambam? To what extent is the Rambam talking about this?
either in Metzias or in Focus. Right, we have two questions in the Rambam. One is the Rambam interested in the fact of sprouting, or is he interested in preparation? And even if he's talking about sprouting, but it's maybe a different level of sprouting, the modern day Metzias of planting in a hydroponics context may be much closer to karka than what the Rambam was talking about, even if he is. So there's a big sugya to figure out, and the implications are for sure widespread. Now, might they be different? Maybe the reasons to be machalic between Shavuos and Shabbos, for sure. We could definitely define one major reason to be machalic, just without getting into the whole sugya, is that we mentioned this a little bit in our introductory discussions, that if we assume that Shabbos is about your malacha, and Shavuos is about the karka, because the Torah sounds like it is, you're not supposed to work your soda. So then we could argue that a hydroponics pool is not a soda, but it could be an active zriya. So without getting into the whole sugya head on, that's one major avenue one could theoretically pursue to distinguish between the two. Also kiloyim, we also find a soda focus. So if we assume that we're focusing on that, maybe that's a reason not to call anything that grows in the hydroponic setting a Shavuos issue or a Kilayim issue, while still possibly considering it even a full-fledged Zorei issue. Hi.
When it comes to like the way they grew stuff in like Gush Katif, like in the sand, is that the same as...
They used the sand, or they cultivated the sand? That's how they were...
I think it was...
But they also had hydroponics operations going on over there. That's Rav Elsner's point, that the water is not just water. The water is not normal water.
The Rambam's don't have it where they have those stamens, the two buckets, one has fish in it, and the other one has like these like weird rock things and water, and like the manure from the fish comes in.
And cultivates the water. Right, so that's his point, that it's not, that the water that we're talking about is not stone water, which is why there is a big question to what extent the Rambam that we're talking about today and yesterday, is that Rambam enough? The Rambam's relevant, but maybe it's not enough. Maybe we have a reason to treat this as closer to Karka, and especially also once we talk about Derech, so Derech can also change. If nowadays this becomes a significant way of producing food, so then that can become Derech, and that may also redefine the landscape, no pun intended, in this whole issue. So those are some important points to keep in mind, and in terms of Avram's point, it's a huge sugi in Shavuos, and there are reasons possibly to distinguish, and there are reasons you might not want to distinguish, but there are potential chilukim between Shabbos and Shemitah, and the Sada focus being a very ripe possibility. Okay, so those are some additional points in terms of that. What about in terms of the issue that we also started to allude to yesterday? The question of to what extent does Zriya require a covering of the seed? Right, so there are some indications that maybe it does. This was the view of, for example, Magen Avos. Mordechai Benet thought that you do need to cover up the seed. It's not enough to put the seed on the ground, but it has to be covered up. Perhaps there is a raya from the Gemara in the end of Makos where the Gemara talks specifically about covering up Zrayim, Mechafe Zrayim. And the Gemara says in that context you could potentially be chayav for Zoreya. Or another possible proof is from the Tosfos and Daf Nun and Beis, which you saw, most of you saw, which talks about Rav Haigon's view that you were planting, if the Gemara talks about over there, that you're not planting here, look like you're planting. You have vegetables and you don't have a fridge, because back then, at the time of the Gemara, all the fridges were broken. So they had to find some other way to keep things protected. So if you stick it in the ground, that's where it started off. It's, nowadays, it sounds a little unappetizing, but remember, that's where this food came from in the first place. So you stick your vegetables in the karka. So there's a suggestion in Rav Haigon that if it was completely covered, you'd have a problem. And if it's not completely covered, so then that's what makes it not an act of Zoreya, or inversely an act of Kotzer to take it out. So some think that these two points together are a raya that there is a necessity to actually cover the seed. If you don't actually cover the seed, so then it's not a full-fledged act of Zoreya. And others disagree. The Egli Tal disagrees. You don't have to necessarily find either of these proofs so convincing. Gil, you want to address that?
Yeah, in the beginning of the Gemara, in Ayin Gimel, when it talks about why we don't say or Zareh, so it seems like just putting the seeds in without covering them would be enough, because the covering it, they call a Porish.
That's part of the point, so I want you to bring that up. So what does our Gemara say? So Gemara on the top of Ayin Gimel in the base talks about why the Mishnah lists Zareya first, and then Choresh. According to the Gemara over there, so maybe you should have said Choresh first, as the Rambam and many others list Lachos, because presumably you have to plow first and then put the seeds in. So why should Zareya come first? So said our Gemara, well, where the Tana was writing in Eretz Yisrael, the ground is hard, so the only way to get things done is you have to plow, and then put seeds in, and then plow again. So that second act of plowing, what is that? How does that impact on our understanding here? So you could say, So you could say it's an act of Zriya, but the problem is, within the context of the Gemara, you have to really say it's Choresh, right? Because the Gemara is justifying why the Melacha of Choresh is listed after Zriya. So what does it come out from the Gemara and the Mishnah together? What do you have? You have Choresh as a Melacha, and when does it take place? After the Zriya. Even though maybe in our experience, all of us who are farmers here, it takes place before Zriya. But the Gemara is saying there's a scenario, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, where the Charisha can take place both times, before and after Zriya. So you can't tell me that the Zriya needs the Charisha. That's the point the Eglital makes. That's the point also the Afikayam. Afikayam was a student of Chaim Brisker, Yechiel Michal Rabinowitz. He wrote a nice Lamdish Sefer where he has a whole section on the Melachos. Second volume of the Sefer, he's got a number of long essays on the Melachos. Shorter essays, altogether it's one long essay. Talks about the Melachos, so he makes this point as well, that if you say you have to cover up the seeds, so according to that, in Eretz Yisrael, you could never have an act of Zriya. Right? Because it wasn't physically possible to have the seeds covered up, unless you did Charisha, and the Charisha, you could have thought, well, that's not Charisha anymore, that's Zriya, but it won't work with the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is listing it as Charisha, and the Gemara is identifying it as a post-Zriya Charisha, necessary for the seeds to be covered. So there are those, such as the Eglital and the Tikayam, who say that this is a proof against what the Magen Avos is assuming. Assuming that it has to be covered, you can't necessarily see that from the sources that are identified. Yes, sir?
I thought the whole point of what the Minchas Tenet was saying in those days is that the whole reason Rambam postulates like Rabbi Yossi and the Machlokes of Rava is that because you can say legitimately that there's another opinion that really Charisha Sheni is just a Toldo Zriya.
Right. You could say that in theory, but it's still not going to read from our Gemara. And so nowadays, for example, you could say that a Charisha that you do for the purpose of making the seeds go in is a Toldo Zriya. Rashi writes in Psachim that it's a Toldo Zriya. And the question is, why doesn't he say it's Zriya? Right, that's already a kind of an ambiguous source. Because if Zriya requires it, and you don't have Zriya without covering the soil, so then that's not a toldo of Zareya, that's Zareya. And the Mechasinuch asked this question on Rashi. You should say that that's literal Zareya.
But without that, how can we say that the Rambam, why would he possibly like Rabbi Yossi, that whole article, the whole paragraph from
you're talking about which malacha is.
Right.
Right, so we'll get to that. That's a question in itself. But the point is, it could be true that a charisha, an act of plowing, might be characterized as Zriya. The problem is, it's not the whole story. Because our Gemara and Ayin Gimel
makes it seem like it's
right, lists a malacha of charisha, which is happening for the purposes of covering up the seeds. So it can't be, according to the Avigayam and others, that if you don't cover up the seeds, you're not chayiv in Zriya. It means that Eretz Yisrael, there's no Zriya. You can only have Zriya if you do another malacha together. You ever have a malacha like that, which you can only be chayiv if you also do another malacha? Probably not. We'll see, the relationship between Charish and Zriya is already a little bit over intertwined, but this would be too much to say that Zriya itself is half a malacha. A And the only way to violate Zriya is to do both Zriya and Charisha. So that's what the Egle Talmud and the Kayam say. It's not really viable, so we have to assume that it means Zriya can be done by itself.
Is it possible to say just that in a normal case, not like for the ground cut like an Eretz Yisrael, then yeah, you do have to use Zriya in the normal way, but that's an exception of the case.
You could say it all depends on the circumstances. That Zriya means you got to get the seeds in the ground. So if it means getting it in the ground can happen because the ground is soft and it will absorb it by itself, so then good. But if it means that you need to chop up the ground first in order to cover it up, then that's what it means. It's all going to be subjective. It's all going to be circumstantial, basically. Is that not what you're saying?
If you have to chop it up, then that... then Zriya would be even if you don't chop it up.
So if you have to chop it up, so then... well, so what were you suggesting?
Just that in a general way, without covering it, it does count. But this is a unique case because the ground's not normal.
So you're saying, essentially, circumstantially, it'll all depend. That if the ground's going to absorb it one way without your chopping up the ground, so then it's Zriya by itself. And if not, you have to chop up the ground in order for it to be Zriya. So that might be, but it still would be, again, a circumstantial type of Zriya, which would not be a proof, one way or another, that Zriya has to include Charisha, has to include covering. It would still imply that you could be Chayav Zriya without covering up the soil yourself. So this is a whole debate, as we see. And the Magen Avos maintaining it has to be covered by you, and others disputing the proofs, bringing other proofs, disputing the proofs. For example, just because the Gemara, let's say, in Makos, suggests that covering soil is an act of Zriya, doesn't mean that it's the only way to violate Zriya. It could mean that if you happen upon an area of land, well, let's say you happen to find a little box carved out in the soil, and there is a seed on top of it, you're like, okay, I want to plant the seed, I'll kick some soil on top of it. So yeah, we'd probably all agree that that is an act of Zriya. But it doesn't mean that Zriya requires it. You can't necessarily derive from that language that you have to have the soil covered for it to be an act of Zriya.
We're saying this is an affirmative of hydroponics, or we're saying this is a separate...
Yeah, but we're past the hydroponics quest. Basically, just this whole question of whether Zriya requires covering the soil as well as part of the act. So there are those who might prove point from that Gemara and Makos that covering is identified there. But it's relatively easy to say, no, covering would be an act of Zriya. It doesn't mean that you need covering in order for Zriya to take place. There are also some who suggest that in terms of the proof from Rav Haigom about the vegetables, that maybe there's a difference between vegetables and seeds. Seeds are yet to grow. So the way you can make them grow, you put them in the ground, either you cover them up or you don't cover them up, they'll eventually grow into something. Vegetables, which are already fully grown, if you have, for some reason, want to replant them, that requires actual complete covering. And maybe we don't necessarily have an absolute relationship between vegetables and seeds in order to derive one from the other. So there are various points back and forth as far as trying to prove this issue. And it has some nafkaminas. It has, as we mentioned yesterday, so what if you only do half the process? What if you put the seed in on Shabbos and you cover it up after Shabbos? What if you put the seed in and somebody else covers it up? What if you put the seed in and you pick it up before allowing it to be covered? So all of these nafkaminas that we could have had in the original Zriya case that the Mishnah potentially denied, we could bring back to life if we had this idea that Zriya essentially is maybe a two-step process. So these are all points that are discussed in this context. But what exactly would you think is the lungus shabbat? What do you think is the issue at hand? Is the issue, why would it be that I do have to cover it up or I don't have to cover it up? Any thoughts about that? How would I say one way or the other? There are various suggestions that some of the Svarim have. Some suggest that it goes back to a Mishkan comparison. Maybe this is what the Malacha was in the Mishkan. They put it in the ground and it was covered up. And therefore, that's what it is here. Others suggest that maybe if we're defining Zriya as every necessary process towards growth, maybe there's a little bit of a Metzius question here, but maybe if you need this covering as a concrete step towards bringing about growth, so then that might itself be also considered to be part of the Zriya definition. And maybe without being covered up, it's not considered to be a full concrete step towards growth. Hi.
According to that definition, would they also include every Harisha Rishona?
As part of the Zriya?
Yeah.
So Harisha Rishona is for sure separate.
But if we're defining it as anything that'll help the growth.
I think that'll help the growth afterwards.
The
seed isn't there yet. You could have said, based on the Rambam we mentioned yesterday, that Harisha Rishona is a preparatory act similar to the Radbaz's. Right, Rambam is soaking in the seed. And the difference would be, that I think we mentioned this yesterday, that yeah, you could have said that, except that then we have the whole Amitas Malachas concept, that if it's got its own status in the Mishkan, it gets its own name as a Malacha, even if maybe you could have figured it out without that. And once we start Choresh, Bez Hashem, tomorrow, we'll get a little bit to how much the definition of Choresh is completely intertwined with the preparatory act for Israel, how much it isn't. We'll get into that a little bit more. So, couldn't one suggest that the issue here is, it's a little bit really similar to the Rosh Hashanah and the Chasino. Essentially, what is it that we're acting upon? Are we acting upon the seed and putting it in the ground? Or are we focused on bringing about growth? Because you could say, if we're just focused on bringing about growth, so then putting the seed on top of the ground, it'll eventually get absorbed and it'll have the growth. So throwing the seed on the ground, even if you don't cover it up, will bring eventual growth. That should be a full-fledged act of Zoreh. But if we're saying that we can't focus on the eventual growth, because that doesn't happen on Shabbos, and therefore the act of Zriya is simply putting it in the karka, we might need a more formal definition of what's called putting it in the karka. And maybe we might need to say that putting it in the karka involves actually covering it up. Because the fact that it'll ultimately lead to growth, that's nice, but that's not necessarily helpful enough if we need to define Zriya through this stage. Does that make sense? If we're focused on what's ultimately going to happen, okay, so then let that happen later, regardless of how much covering you're doing now. But if we're going to be able to zero in on what's happening right now, we might need a more absolute definition of what's called putting it in the ground. To that note, there's an interesting discussion. You can take it out of the library. Anybody wants to follow up on it? Because in one case where I don't have the library's copy, so I know there should be a copy of it. The contemporary sefer called Meital, written by a French Talmud Chacham, where he has many volumes. It's about 10 volumes on all the malachas total. So this volume actually has quite a bit of malachas in it for one of his volumes. So he has an essay on Zoreya where he focuses the whole Rosh Hashanah, Chasinuch and others question differently. He thinks basically every issue in Zoreya is essentially, are we looking to promote growth? Or is the act of Zoreya being mevatel the seed to the karka? That creating a status now where the seed is part of the karka, maybe that's the act of Zoreya, which is a slightly different way of formulating the Metchasinus view. We mentioned that was a part of the equation also, and we talked about some of the differences between seed and between Zoreya and Bishul. That was a part of the difference. So here he focuses on this as the whole approach here. That do we believe that the act of Zoreya is negating the seed's existence as an independent seed and making it a part of a karka? And he has an interesting discussion. He really puts everything in Zoreya into this category, but into this framework. But he has an interesting point. It's interesting reading. One of the points he makes says, in general, why is it that if you take the Mechatzinov's view, so putting a seed in the ground is already an act of Zareya. So then if it's, you know, you can question how much it has to bother you. This is not really such a agonizing question. But why do we say that Hotzah is a Malach Geruah? Just because it doesn't have much impact on the world. According to the Minchas Chinuch, Zareya is also a Malach Geruah. You put a seed in the ground, nothing happens to it. And you're over on Zareya. So the same way you take something in or out of the house, you move it Dalet Amos for Shulchan Aruch and it has no impact. So according to some Rishonim, that's why we call Hotzah Malach Geruah. So you can say the same thing about Zareya. You put it in the seed, nothing happened. You put it in the ground, nothing happened. So he wants to answer that question by saying, no, it's not true. Something did happen. The seed is now no longer a seed. The seed is now part of the ground. So there is a physical change. There's a status change on this seed, which is significant. So maybe that's the whole idea. So he has a whole discussion about that. But one could easily see a similar concept relevant here. That maybe the idea of Zriya is about negating the seed's independent existence, if we want to focus on something that happens on Shabbos right away. So therefore, maybe we have a more formal definition of Zriya than we might otherwise have. So that's an interesting avenue, perhaps, to explore as far as what could be going on here. Okay, so just in order to get us out on time today, so just mention a few other ideas, and we are committed to talking about Choresh tomorrow. So one of the sugyas where it overlaps with both, so we'll push off most of it in terms of Choresh, is the question of what is the status of Mashke Mayim and Menachesh. The Gemara in the beginning of Mor Katan, which I believe you saw, talks about the Machlokas and the Gemara as far as which is which. Machlokas, Rabbi and Joseph in that Gemara. A question of if I am watering the ground or I am making little holes around the tree to allow the tree to grow better. So that is either Choresh or Zoreya. And so Machlokas in the Gemara, which is which? Or Machlokas in the Gemara, which one it is? And the Rambam splits it. The Rambam says Mashke Mayim is Zoreya and Menachesh in the trees is Choresh. So why that is the whole discussion. We'll talk about that, we'll push that off a little bit to Choresh, but it also opens up the discussion, which the Gemara already starts asking, but why do we have to pick? Why can't it be both? Because it sounds like from our Gemara that our Gemara also talks about Zomer v'tzarech la'etzim, and the person can be pruning a tree, which is some aspect of Zoreya, and yet become chayiv twice, right? Because he's also doing an act of kotzer, because when he's pruning the tree, if he wants the branches, it's going to be an act of kotzer as well. So it sounds like you're chayiv twice. So essentially, the Gemara already asks the question of Mor Katan. Why don't we just say that it's both? Why don't we just say that if you're watering your grass, it's both choresh and both Choresh and Zareh. So the Gemara doesn't really answer the question. So does that mean there's no answer? Probably not. The Rishonim talk about what the possible answers could be. And some assume that the answer really could be both. And that maybe that's why the Rambam wasn't so precise about it, because it doesn't really have that much of a nafkamina. Once we establish that it could be either, it could also be both. Smag's view was that it could be both, and therefore the Rambam's not so precise in distinguishing. So that gets into the whole question of what is the nafkamina of this whole story. So maybe what we'll try to do now in order to keep us on schedule, talk a little bit about this Hasra issue, and then we still left over is the question of the Toldos of Zareya. So maybe we'll try to do that tomorrow and still start on schedule as per our commitment. And maybe we'll just talk now a little bit about this whole Hasra question. So if you saw, Tosfos over here raises the question of whether or not you need Hasra b'shem ha'av. But they assume that in general, when you have Hasra, you need to identify what the person is doing wrong. And if the person is about to incur some type of punishment, So you have to say to him, you're violating such and such an issue. So what about all these Gemaras that raise the question, Mishomai Masrinan Bey, this Gemara that later on talks about Borer and Merakid and about the Tana test, that we use this one for Hasra, we use that one for Hasra. So it sounds like from some of these Gemaras that it's not enough to say to the guy, you're violating Shabbos. You have to tell him you're violating this Malach. So is that true? So Tosis in different places generally take the attitude that no, it's not true. That really you don't have to name an eye. It's enough to say you're being Mechal Shabbos. But if you name the wrong Av, that's a problem. That's worse than that. Right, if a guy is about to plant a seed, and you tell the guy, oh, you realize you're violating the Isser of writing on Shabbos, he says he's going to think you're joking around. So then you can ignore the whole thing. But if you were to say to this guy, you're being Mechal Shabbos, that would be effective, even if you didn't identify because you're violating the Zoreh. That's the whole discussion. The Chastina goes through different opinions. Who says what? Do we assume that you do need to be more specific? Or is it enough to say, you're being Mechal Shabbos, we don't have to tell you how? I told you the wrong thing, I could mess it up because I'll make you think I'm joking, but I don't have to be more specific than being Mechal Shabbos. The Rambam, in general, it sounds like from the Rambam, like it's on the other side of this whole equation. That you don't have to say even you're being Mechal Shabbos. So in general, according to the Rambam, it sounds like you don't have to identify the Aveira at all. You see somebody about to incur a Chiyuv Misa, it's enough to tell the guy what you're doing is Asur, and you're going to be Chayav Misa. And you don't have to identify the Aveira at all. So we have essentially three possibilities. Either that you have to identify the Aveira, which is probably the most mainstream approach. And then on either extreme, maybe you have to be even more specific and identify the Av when it comes to Shabbos. Or on the other side of the extreme, maybe you don't really have to identify the Avera, you just have to tell the guy what he's doing tomorrow. So what svara would there be to say you have to identify the Av? If the Torah doesn't identify the Av, and the Torah just says, don't do malacha, so what would obligate me to go beyond that? If you want to give somebody malchus for basa b'challa, so you tell them you're about to eat basa b'challa. You don't have to say you're about to eat a cheeseburger at Wendy's on a Tuesday. How specific do you have to get, especially if the Torah is not getting any more specific? So why should there be a need to name an Av if the Torah doesn't identify Avos? Any thoughts on this? Sorry, yeah?
Shabbos would be different from Malacha Moshe, so you have to verify that later.
That's interesting. You have the Malach Moshevitz puts an extra burden on their awareness of things, essentially. It's an interesting idea. Okay. Anybody have any other thoughts? Why should it be? If it's enough for me to, let's say the middle sheet, is probably the most mainstream sheet. Right? It's normally enough for me to identify the Aveira. But what's the Aveira of Kol Shabbos in the Torah? Just Kol Shabbos. It doesn't list Malachos in the Torah. So just because there are all these details that we're learning about this year, why should I be obligated in Hasra to name that? I don't have to get more specific than the Torah does in other contexts.
So why would that be on the Torah?
Okay, so it could be related to the whole Avos distinction. Now why would there be Avos? We can have Avos for the reasons of Chiyuv. The whole, what we know from the Gemara is that we need Avos just so if somebody does two different Avos, he's hired two different provisions. But it doesn't necessarily tell us Hasra is the case. But it could be right that it's related. Right? It could be right that there are those who assume that this could tie into Havara L'chalek Yosef. And we know that the Gemara we saw on Davayim is also, again, part of our Yibamas unity, Sukkot, this Gemara for its parak Yibamas, that the extra pasuk in Parshas Vayakel, both Zavaru Eish, Chol Mosh Vasechem, Yom HaShabbos, so the Gemara suggests that it's there to tell us, according to one opinion, that Havara L'chalek Yotzis. That Havara shows all the malachos are distinct from each other. It's a concept of Chiluk Malachos that we have different Chiyuvim for different Karbanos. that you just mentioned. So how far do you go with that? Maybe we could say not only are there different korbanos, but essentially it's like there's different psukim. It's ki'ilu the Torah wrote out 39 times, don't do malach. And therefore, yes, you don't normally have to go further than what the Torah says, but here it says the Torah does say 39 times. That's a possible approach. There are many who suggest this based on the Tosfos Rid. The Tosfos Rid in Daf Kuf Lamed Ches, which essentially sounds like that's how we understand Havara L'Chalik Yartzes. However, there are those who argue on that approach. See, based on Frank in his Chuvus, he also has a whole section of the Malachas in his Chuvus. And he suggests that really this Tosfos Rid is a proof not that way. Why? Because if you remember back in the first day, that Gemara about Bayin, Gemara has a number of different possibilities where Chiluk Malachos comes from. This idea of viewing the Malachos as distinct for the purposes of Karbanos. And Havara is one of them, one of the possible choices. But it's very possible that's not the winner. Why? Because as Tosfos points out elsewhere, we need also the possible of Aru H to tell us something else. Maybe you would not have seen Havara as a malacha because it's essentially destructive. It's an act of Makalka. So maybe we need the pasuk for that reason. So maybe we don't pasuk that Havara is lachali, and we get two of malachos from one of the other drushes. So then, says Ritzik Pesach, it means davka not that. According to the Tosfos Rid, who says Havara L'Chalik Yotzes means the Malachas are treated like separate Pesukim. If we don't paskin that that's the source, we lose that whole idea. And since we very possibly don't paskin like that source, therefore this Tosfos Rid doesn't help us make all the Pesukim into different ideas. Does everyone understand that? It's a little bit of a tricky concept. Everyone clear on that? Basically, the Tosfos Rid sounds like he's saying that Havara L'Chalik Yotzes means there's 39 psukim in the Torah. It's not the Torah says don't be L'Chal Shabbos, it's as if the Torah says don't cook, don't get fire, don't carry, don't land, etc. So maybe that's why it has a special rule when it comes to Hasra. So that could be a good answer, except says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, we essentially don't paskin Havara L'Chalik Yotzes. And therefore, not only is that an answer, it becomes a negative answer because that would have been the chiddush if that was the mucker. And since that's not the mucker, it's essentially not the case. It's not the case if there's 39 children. So, what is the answer? So I think you could possibly say a whole different halach. You can't possibly say it now, but it would violate my commitment to let you out by 12. That will be our cliffhanger for tomorrow. So I still intend to keep all my commitments. So Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll just say this explanation, talk a little bit about the toldus, and before the time is up, talk about initiating the plowing into forage. So Be'ez Hashem, that's the agenda for tomorrow. You should have a fantastic day.
What? You